KALW.
Underneath this asphalt, our ancestors still hear us, and they're calling on us to continue.
Young Native Americans are looking for ways to connect to the past and lead for future change.
So we take care of sites, you know, we learn about plants that are native here. We know we cook and we use our knowledge of the past, and I think we bring that into the present.
Today we hear from teens on what the land back movement means to them. Then a Coast Miwok family advocates for the native people of Tomales Bay.
Part of addressing intergenerational and cultural trauma is going back and recovering those practices.
We're honoring Indigenous Peoples Day. That's coming up. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Today is Indigenous Peoples Day. A central issue for Native communities is the land back movement. The idea goes beyond property ownership. It's about culture, both ancestral and current, and it's about genuine acknowledgement of wrongs committed and concrete action to right them. Young people are playing a big role in the movement, so today we'll hear from teens about what land back means to them. It's the final episode of TBH, our podcast by, about, and for teenagers. Here are the hosts.
This is TBH. I'm Anthara Gungwal, a senior at Leland High School in San Jose. I'm your host for today's episode. This podcast is made by, about, and for teenagers, and for anybody else who wants to hear what's on our minds.
And I'm Amalia Madrid Lilly, your other host for this season of TBH. And Antara, it's the last episode of the season.
Well, I think that means it's time to hear your story. What's it about?
It's about the land back movement and how Indigenous Americans are reclaiming their ancestral grounds.
So what did you learn while you were reporting?
Yeah, so I learned that the land back movement means so much more to Indigenous communities than quote-unquote property. It's about sustaining cultural practices and restoring ancestral sites for future generations. And it's about recognition and reparations for the wrongs that have been historically inflicted upon us. A lot of what I found in my research, I didn't know as an Indigenous person, so then I questioned who else doesn't know about this.
This season's theme was the election. So how do you think the election relates to this issue?
So many tribes, including the Ohlone in the Bay Area, aren't federally recognized. So to have their land returned to them is so profoundly powerful in a way that not many would otherwise understand. To have the Berkeley City Council sign over the repurchased land to the Ohlone tribe, it shows that our local governments can be allies. So if our local governments can, it stands to reason that our state governments can and our federal governments can.
The city of Berkeley today took action in the effort to return land to Indigenous people.
A landmark settlement has been reached between the city of Berkeley and Ohlone tribal leaders.
This represents the biggest urban land give back to Indigenous people in California history.
At an unassuming parking lot on 4th Street in West Berkeley, Ohlone Indigenous leaders and community organizers are gathered in celebration. Freight trains pass by, mixing with the voices of the crowd. People are eating free tacos.
I have two more on my plate. One is in my mouth and my belly. I got a fish taco left and a mushroom taco.
Making art.
We're painting patches to commemorate the new shell mound that'll be here once it's rebuilt. And there's beautiful blue sky with a bird flying, and then there's green hills, and then there's the spiral of the new shell mound walkway with some orange poppy.
And listening to performances and speakers.
I just wanted to also mention that seeing the Lashon and Big Valley dance here today, that is the first time that the Lashon are actually dancing on the sacred site. So I really want that to sit with you.
The Segorite Land Trust is an Indigenous women-led organization that facilitates the return of Indigenous land to Indigenous people. They've been fighting for years to celebrate this win. My mom engaged me with my Native identity and Indigenous movements from a young age. I was 9 years old when she took me to a Berkeley City Council meeting, where we advocated for the return of the site in West Berkeley, an ancient shell mound. I handed out a zine I made, complete with drawings of cartoon shells talking to one another and explaining the importance of the site. I flipped through the zine with my mom, giggling at the messy handwriting and frequent misspellings.
And then I go on to say, all of these shells are a mixture of sad, angry, and confused because of what people are doing to the shell mound. What now is a parking lot used to be an Ohlone shell mound and an ancient burial site. Then I made a page titled The Dream, which is based off of, at the time in 2017, what the proposed dream for the rematriation of the shell mound site would be. I write, the dream includes a 40-foot mound covered with orange poppies. The dream is beautiful, yes, but it is one thing to dream, but another to build it.
In April of 2024, the proposed dream I wrote about those years ago came closer to becoming a reality. The Berkeley City Council transferred the property of the West Berkeley Shell Mound to the Segorite Land Trust,
thereby returning the land to the Ohlone people.
Some 5,000 years ago, the Ohlone tribe established the first human settlements in the land now called the Bay Area. The gray asphalt may not look like much today, but for years it was a shell mound, a burial and ceremonial site for the Ohlone. UC Berkeley archaeologist Nels Nelson estimated that in 1909, the Bay Area had over 400 shell mounds, the West Berkeley site being the oldest. At the celebration, the director of Segorite, Karina Gold, points to the ground and says,
because underneath this asphalt, like my brother Gary said, our ancestors still hear us and they're calling on us to continue. This is not the end of it. This is the beginning of a new chapter.
Among those celebrating the return of the shell mound are youth, members of Segorite's Michini Numa Youth Program.
My name is Koyo Tena. I'm 16 years old, and I joined the program 2 years ago.
Koyo tells me that the program allowed him to come out of his shell during his freshman year.
Like, I think the program teaches how to be a black and brown youth in Oakland, in an urban area such as Oakland, and, you know, in these times. So we take care of sites, you know, we learn about plants that are native here. We cook, we learn about all the cuisine and all the, like, the culture from here, and then we just learn about the history. And we use our knowledge of the past, and I think we bring that into the present.
Koyo feels strongly about the future of the shell mound and Segorite's work to reclaim stolen land.
Let this happen. We're going to build it from the ground up. You know, we're going to take back our land because, you know, this is our land. This is, you know, our ancestors have been living on it for thousands of years. And, you know, we want our descendants for thousands of years to come to be able to come to this land and be like, this is our land. This is our people's land. This is where we belong.
Araceli is a youth program coordinator for Michini Numa. They say this is a win for Native youth. Although young folks don't often get to be a part of the logistical process, seeing a community's success story is empowering.
For many of them, I think it's important to reconnect to their Indigenous ancestors and to see themselves as Indigenous leaders, because for many of them, they're not being represented in their schools, in the city. Here's a space for them to be able to do that.
But this space is pricey. Segorite provided $25 million, acquired through the Shumi land tax.
Shumi is a Chochenyo word that means gift, and Chochenyo is the indigenous language of this land.
That was Ariel Lucky, the development director at Segorite. He was involved with the creation of the land tax in 2015. He says that Shumi is an invitation for people to be mindful of their relationship with the land they live on.
To recognize really that all of our society now is really built on the historical legacy of the land theft and colonization and genocide that happened here.
Through donations, Shumi has helped fund and grow Segorite. Ariel says that the ongoing support of the land tax makes it possible for them to continue their transformative work, like the rematriation of the West Berkeley Shell Mound. But as a Native person, I have complex feelings over Indigenous groups buying back their historical land.
Yeah, I mean, we are working in one of the most inflated real estate markets, you know, in the country, if not in the world. You know, everyone knows the Bay is hella expensive.
I was pleased to hear from Ariel that not all land returns are purchases. From gifted land, cultural conservation easements, and long-term lease agreements at subsidized rates, Ariel tells me that there are many pathways to land return, and purchasing actually isn't ideal.
And in some ways, you know, I think it even raises the question, is that really rematriation? Is that really, you know, the land is returning to Indigenous hands, but it's allowing the capitalist real estate market and, you know, speculative land pricing and all of these things to continue.
I agree. Movement Generation is working to inspire civic engagement. They work to help restore and liberate land, labor, and culture. And as I spoke with Movement Generation's co-director, Angela Aguilar, I learned more about the strong significance of land return. She says it's far more than the return of quote-unquote property.
It's about returning our lifeways and sharing those with the generations that come after us.
Angela says that a lot of this work is about organizing within the community, from fundraising to foundations and grassroots organizations. Strong community ties are so important. They recently worked in collaboration with Segurite to liberate 43 acres of land in the East Oakland Hills.
It's about being able to then have Indigenous leadership and vision in taking care of that land and restoring that land.
Indigenous leadership could actually make all of our lives better. Ecological data from Brazil, Australia, and Canada shows that lands under Indigenous leadership have equal, if not more, biodiversity than special conservation lands managed by governments. California has seen significant progress in land return this year. Several sites have been reclaimed and returned to Native tribes. My mom says that this discussion needs to continue, even if some people don't like it.
Land back, land return, is a conversation that has to be had like the conversation around reparations. It's going to make a lot of people unhappy and uncomfortable and mad because a lot of people have built their familial wealth on stolen land. So when you put it like that, it means people got to give back what they didn't rightfully have. And nobody wants to hear that.
I encourage everyone, particularly youth, to examine your relationship to the land you dwell, the plants, animals, and cultures that make up its population. Who are the original inhabitants? What languages did they speak? What foods did they eat? Are their descendants fighting to reclaim stolen lands? Speak up for them, but not over them. Be an advocate. Listen.
Young people are such passionate and powerful advocates. And when they're fired up about things, you know, that energy is contagious.
Thanks, Amalia. These conversations about land return are critical. I hope the West Berkeley Shell Mound will inspire future Indigenous land reclamation. Well, that wraps up this season of TBH.
I can't believe it's over. This season, the stories we've heard have such a personal element to them. I feel like I've got to know my fellow producers at an even deeper level after hearing from them.
I definitely agree. There's so many issues that teens care about this election. We hope these stories can guide other youth in influencing election outcomes.
This season, we heard from Antara Gungwal, Charlotte King, Jessica Kim,
along with Amaya Dorman-McKenzie, Jeremy Strauss, and Amalia Madrid-Lilly. We'd like to thank our producers and editors for their hard work in telling these stories.
And for the last time, we'd like to thank you for listening. I'm your host, Amalia Madrid-Lilly.
And I'm Antara Gungwal. You've been listening to TBH, a podcast from KALW Public Radio. The feature you heard in this episode was produced by Amalia Madrid-Lilly. It was edited by True Gwen, who taught in the program along with Sarah Lai Sterling. Ava Richards is our production assistant. Our artwork was created by Awan Mance.
James Rollins and Tarek Fuda are our engineers. Shireen Adel is our supervising editor. Ben Trefney is our executive producer.
That was the final episode of our latest season of TBH, our KALW podcast made by, about, and for teenagers. You can find that story and all our past seasons at kalw.org/TBH and subscribe on your podcast player. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Henat Baba. Coast Miwok people can be traced back nearly 5,000 years to the land known today as the Point Reyes National Seashore. But like most indigenous communities in this country, their land was taken away. Teresa Harlan was adopted at birth by a member of one of the last Tamalco families to live on the western shores of Tamales Bay. The Felix family built their homestead at what's known today as Laird's Landing. It's a small cove tucked away in Tamales Bay. KALW's Johanna Miyake brings us their story about regaining access to their ancestral home.
Teresa says at least four generations of the Felix family lived right here. That all changed in the 1950s.
It's been 66 years since our family actually lived in this house when my Uncle Vic lived here and my grandpa lived here. My uncle was served eviction papers in the 50s.
She says ranchers claim this was their land, despite the Felix family having lived here long before the ranchers arrived.
Then he went to court to contest it, and he and his attorney, William Weissick, took it all the way to the California State Supreme Court. And they lost.
Teresa and her cousins didn't grow up coming here.
Because by the time we came around, the family had already been forced out.
Ranch owners used the surrounding land for cattle grazing, but the Felix family homestead was deserted until an artist came upon it in the 1960s. In exchange for upkeep and $5 a month rent, he lived there until he died. In 2016, the Park Service said they would restore the Felix family home. Since then, Teresa's visited often, but little has been done to restore the structures.
We have received special use permits, and the park has unlocked the gate so we can drive down. We had a big family meeting here.
She tells me this was the first time they gathered here in over 70 years.
All these ranches that, you know, you drove past on El Ranch, and you can see a bit of McClure's Ranch, they all have permits, grazing permits for the dairy cows.
They don't own the land.
Right, they don't own the land.
The Park Service owns the land. Teresa says her family isn't asking for the land back. They want to work with the Park Service to restore the home and honor the Coast Miwok and their history as the first people of this land.
Our vision is that this is a place where the house is restored. There's walkways, there's gardens, there's people here doing basket weaving or attending plants. It's an active site. You could learn about Felix family history. You could see photographs of the family, you know, so that people will walk away and they'll think, wow, well, those folks lived. They were part of nature, they were part of the land, they were part of the waters. That's something that we should all try to dream about and maybe take a little piece of that and make it happen at our own home.
The Felix family would also like a special permit to access the road and the home. It's important that they can gather inside the home built by their ancestors on their ancestral land. Teresa says when Indigenous land is taken, it's not just about land. It's about the loss of culture, traditions, and stories.
My mother was very proud of her ability to row across Tamales Bay. Part of addressing intergenerational and cultural trauma is going back and recovering those practices. She had the muscle memory of rowing across that bay to Marshall.
Teresa's just now learning how to kayak here. Teresa started to see Felix Cove as a part of a larger issue. She started the Alliance for Felix Cove in 2021 and quickly formed partnerships with established Native community organizations of Marin County. Teresa calls the group a powerhouse, fighting for Native lands and Native people.
We're planning to host a Tule canoe launch. It's called re-indigenizing Tamaliwa, welcoming back our relatives to Tamales Bay. So we're commissioning the construction of a tule canoe, and we're inviting Native folks to come and join us with their tule canoes, their dugout canoes, kayaks, whatever. We want to fill that bay with Native people.
But first, more Coast Miwok people would have to learn how to build tule canoes as their ancestors did. A few months after my visit to Felix Cove, I attend a canoe building workshop at the Native-run Cultural Conservancy in Sebastopol. Greg Riza is the president of the Museum of the American Indian. He's a big guy with an even bigger smile. He steadily chops away at willow trees for the tule canoe frame. He says learning to build a tule canoe in the traditional way takes time.
We had a miniature tule canoe built so that people understood how these all worked. And so it is learning. It's learning skills and then, building community and building togetherness.
Michelle Heary chats with other volunteers as she bundles willow. She's visiting from Dublin, Ireland.
Have you ever done something like this before?
God, no. No. I mean, my country does have a tradition of basket weaving, but I've never done it. So.
Well, maybe now you'll go back and basket
weave. I am literally thinking of how do I get a willow plantation going. That's what I'm thinking, because they're talking about how difficult it is for basket weavers to get willow. So it's actually now on my agenda.
A week later, I'm back at Felix Cove. The canoe isn't quite ready for a full launch, but the Felix family gathers to bless it in the waters at Felix Cove. Teresa's cousin David leads the ceremony.
We're providing a means in which our next generations will know this as Felix family home, know how to build a tule canoe, know the teas that our moms, our aunties, our uncles, that they would gather and use for medicine. So this is our first step to bringing that healing.
By the time the handmade tule canoe is watertight, Teresa couldn't get another permit to launch it from Felix Cove. So they moved the event to other Coast Miwok land, McNair's Beach on San Pablo Bay.
It's beautiful and she's buoyant.
All right, it's floating now. It's floating.
Under a clear blue sky, the grand tule canoe adorned with wildflowers gets a gentle push from the shore. Teresa and her husband Tiger paddle off to the cheers of family, friends, and supporters. People watch from the shore and wait for their turn to paddle the canoe, named the Tamaliwa, the Coast Miwok name for the sacred waters of Tamales Bay. We watch the Tamaliwa glide over calm waves, bringing Teresa and Tiger safely ashore to more cheers.
Beautiful. Thank you. Absolutely gorgeous. All right, who's next?
Teresa looks joyful, just like the day we happened on all the wildflowers on our walk to Felix Cove.
It feels beautiful, and it makes me feel so happy to see Tashina and Jason out there paddling. I mean, it was great to be there too, but it was built for the community, so it's great to see the community out there and our relatives out there.
Teresa's journey started with a desire to bring her family back to their ancestral home. But it's become about all Native people coming home to Tamales Bay. Through the Tule Canoe Project, she found support and solidarity within the larger Indigenous community. She's working with her powerhouse to develop an Indigenous youth kayak and water navigation program. And they have plans to launch the Tamaliwa from Felix Cove when the winter storm season is over. In Marin County, I'm Johanna Miyake for Cross Currents.
Johanna reported that story in 2023. Since the story aired, Harlan has submitted a vision plan to the Point Reyes National Seashore that proposes a cooperative agreement and developing a stewardship plan. You can find more information about the Alliance for Felix Cove and a longer version of this story at klw.org/crosscurrents. Tune in tomorrow morning at 11. We ask, can psychedelics help heal collective racial trauma?
I immediately was transported. Like, I could feel it. It was almost like I left my body. And I looked up, and my grandmother was standing there.
It's an award-winning episode of the Stoop podcast, tomorrow morning at 11. Today's Cross Currents team includes Yosmai Del Maso, Anthony Ivey, Aaron Lim, Donadie Joe Johnson, Victor Tense, Molly Blair Salier, Hanisha Herjani, Angela Johnston, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega Welch, Sunni Khalid, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.